Good morning, HempFest, Sunday morning, 2015. We're really pleased to see the Hemposium tent filling up. We have a great show today. Seven amazing panels, entertainment, and Gaio, everybody. So stick around. This is a great panel, one I helped put together. This is about the medical, recreation, and spiritual uses of cannabis. They've become almost three separate movements, and we want to know, can they coexist? And can we keep from fighting each other to the point of wiping each other out? Today we got Gloria Keltic, is that right?
Keltic,
all right. Doug McVeigh, Keith Strop, Vivian McPeak will be here soon, and Carrie Boyder. They're all amazing activists, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what they're up to. Yeah, I miss Weed Man. He's not on my schedule. I'm sorry. Here he is. New Jersey Weed Man. He's here too. Let's let each speaker introduce themselves and what they're doing about cannabis reform. And let's start with Doug there on that end and work our way across.
Good morning. Good morning. I am Doug McVeigh, as he said. I do a bunch of stuff, freelance journalism. I'm a reporter for KBOO Radio in Portland. And I am also the host of a show called Century of Lies. Comes out every week. Newest is going online today. Oh my gosh. I'm also the editor and compiler of a resource called Drug War Facts at drugwarfacts.org. Every bit of information you could want. And I'll present it in a kind of plain vanilla way. We don't have pot leaf graphics. I don't have weed ads. I don't have bud babes. Sorry. I don't have any music. And that's because I want a website that your kids and your grandkids can go to in their middle school, and the school librarian will look at it and bookmark it because it's such a great resource. I want something you can send your grandparents to, and they can have their church prayer circle look at because they're interested in getting this information, and they know that when they get all these people going boo and scaring them, and it doesn't work. That's sort of what I do. My purpose in life is to learn and to then communicate what I learn to other people. You folks are the ones who have to make people care. Well, you already care. You figured that out. What you need to do is communicate your passion. And the spiritual use for me has been the passion. I found that I've become a better person, concerned about things and people and stuff like that after I started smoking weed. And the more I got into my marijuana activism, the more I realized it's not really about pot. Like I say, you did a great job out here legalizing weed. Good start. There's a long way to go, and God, do you have a lot of work left.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's enough of an introduction, isn't it?
I'm Gloria Keltic. I am a co-founder of the Continuum Fellowship of Universal Understanding. We are a group that meets on a regular basis, mainly made up of local activists, varying religious backgrounds who share in the spiritual communion of cannabis, and as well as the changes that we're working to create. Some of us have different viewpoints. I have friends that are on the five, that are medical users. I have friends that are recreational users. I know people who use for other purposes. And I kind of come from the perspective that if your body is not well, your spirit is not well. So medical use serves the spirit. And part of the purpose of spirit is to have a good time in our life and to be able to share in the joy of being alive. And recreational allows us to do that. So for me, it doesn't matter whether you're using it for recreational or for medicine or strictly because it's a religious thing. They're all good for the spirit and for what makes life good. And that's kind of what we teach and what we practice, and we do other community outreach. We have a garden, we share food, we do a lot of other things that are supportive of the spirit beyond cannabis.
Keith?
I'm Keith Strop. I'm legal counsel at Normal, and Normal has always been a consumer lobby. It grew out of some work I had initially done with Ralph Nader. But the consumer in this instance is the marijuana smoker. So we've always tried to represent the interest of marijuana smokers, regardless of why they're smoking. It seems irrelevant to me as to why you smoke. The government has no business knowing whether we smoke or why we smoke. Now, interestingly, I spend a lot of my work in writing and speaking focusing on the fact that I think it's only incidentally about marijuana anyway. I think it's about personal freedom. And I do indeed believe that that's a universal concept that you can connect with people, many of whom do not smoke marijuana. I think the reason we're winning this issue nationwide right now is because the majority of the non-smokers, of the 86% who don't smoke, nonetheless have recognized that prohibition is a failed public policy, that it destroys the lives needlessly of hundreds of thousands of good, productive citizens. So they're anti-prohibition. They're not pro-pot, but that's all right. It means they vote our way. So I think most of these reasons that we smoke may disappear in the bigger picture. Now, I will say this, that I had a case in my own life where I began to have seizures when I was 65 years old, and I didn't even know what a seizure was or an epileptic was. Well, I am an epileptic. It's anyone who's had more than two seizures. My seizures are under control, but I can't help but tell you, when I first experienced the first seizure, and it was very frightening not being familiar with it, I called my good friend Lester Grinspoon at Harvard, who I thought, man, he knows everything. So, Lester, what the hell's going on? I'm a 65-year-old man, and I just had a seizure. And he said, Keith, you probably would have had seizures most of your adult life, except you've been taking the best anti-seizure medication for all those years. And he's right. I've been smoking for 50 years. So even without intending it as medical use, I suspect that it probably was keeping me from having seizures before they finally broke through. As you get a certain age, your neurons quit firing right, and seizures are more common. Now, there's one other thing, too, I think is worth mentioning. I talk about this occasionally publicly, but I think one has to be careful. I think marijuana is more than just okay, and I think it's more than just fun to get me high. When I have to do any serious writing or thinking, if I'm trying to work on a speech and nothing's coming to my mind that seems worthwhile, I lock myself in my home office and get just stoned as I can in front of my computer, and I write down every thought I have. And the next morning, I look at them, and some of them I laugh at. I mean, it's stoner stupid stuff that I should have recognized. But almost every time, there's one or two insightful thoughts I have that help me analyze an issue, and I'm surprised I wasn't able to come up with those when I was straight, but I wasn't. And so for me, and I think for a lot of people who use marijuana, part of the benefit is that it opens your mind up. It expands your mind. It's a little of the Andy Weil theory of life. Sometimes experiencing expanded consciousness allows you to look at your life and your work and your family in a little better perspective. So, mostly I like getting high, but I think it also has a lot of other helpful aspects.
Hello, my name is Vivian McPeak. I'm the executive director of Seattle Hemp Fest. I'm really honored to be at this table with all these absolutely wonderful people that I love and care for very much. I'm very proud to be here. I've been smoking pot only for 40 years, Keith. I'm embarrassed. I've become a newcomer. You know, I just started recently. And I'm also, you know, I'm also like what Stephen Gaskin used to call a traditional American hippie. And still proud of it. I'm still a hippie, believe it or not. To me, it was about a state of mind and a lifestyle and a belief system rather than a time period or a fad or something like that. And to me, cannabis is a method, a upaya, a vehicle for introspection, for connection to the natural world, for reflection, for centering and grounding. I believe that cannabis prohibition is just a symptom of much greater and systemic war against the natural world that's global on every level. When it comes to our food, when it comes to our medicine, when it comes to our energy, when it comes to our environment, when it comes to our marketing, our lifestyle, our packaging, you name it, synthetics. There's a war against the natural world, and it's a war that if we win, we lose. You know, at the very least, it's a feeling that we have to compete with the natural world. At the worst, it's this feeling that we need to defeat the natural world, which is defeating ourselves because we're a part of that. And I believe that religion, just like cannabis use, is a just like the war to legalize cannabis and repeal prohibition, it's really about freedom of choice, you know? The reason you do Hemp Fest isn't because we think that pot's for everybody or that everybody should do pot. We think that everybody should have the choice, the right. Every adult should have the right and the freedom to make that choice for themselves, just like they should be able to choose their medicine and their medical treatment and what food they want to eat, and whether it's GMO or not, or whether it's organic or not. And they should be able to also choose what religion, you know. This country is supposedly founded, literally founded, upon a belief of religious freedom. And so we need to walk our talk. If we really mean, if that means anything at all, then Americans should have the right to use cannabis if that's the way that they worship, or the way they connect, or the way that they project, or get grounded and centered with the spirituality of themselves. I do apologize. My stage, my first speaker starts at 11:35. So I dare say I'm gonna have to bug out a little early, and I apologize for that.
My name is Edward Fortune, publicly known as the New Jersey Weed Man. The question here is medical, recreational, spiritual use. Can they coexist? Yes, they can coexist. They exist because I know I exist. I belong to all three fronts here. On the recreational side, which I prefer to call social, I've been smoking a little less than these guys. I think I'm at around 35 years, though. I started at 15, and I'm 51 now. So I'm right up there with you, though. Medical, I got diagnosed in 2000 with a form of bone cancer. I've had a couple different procedures to take tumors out. Some of them just exist and don't bother me. Other ones exist, and they're extremely painful. Most people with my condition are hooked on some type of painkillers, Percocets or, you know, oxycodones or something. And I'll admit I've used them, but I think the reason why I'm not hooked on any of those things is because I smoke as much marijuana as I do. You know, I tell people all the time, you know, even if I just get a headache, I'm not gonna pop a Tylenol. I'm gonna twist one up and smoke it all. On the religious side, same thing. I was brought up a Baptist. You know, I think like most black people were brought up in a church setting. I went to church quite a bit when I was a kid with my mom, with my grandma. It seemed like with every family member in the world. And at some point when I was a teenager, I kind of rejected it. I think for years I called myself an agnostic only because I was too afraid to say I was an atheist. At some point, I even did call myself an atheist. And then sometime in my 30s, I started getting into Rastafari. And I think the reason why I even paid attention to that religion was because of the marijuana use. For years, I called myself a Rastafarian. At this point, I'm just a spiritual person. I'm not following anybody's particular religion. But I do believe marijuana is spiritual. It was put here by a higher power. People who use it and people who use it religiously, I always think are good people. I don't think I ever ran into a spiritual pot user who I also thought was an evil person. You know. So to answer the question, can they exist? Yes, they can exist. Anyway.
Hi everyone, I'm Carrie Boyder, and I am an advocate for criminal justice reform in a broad sense. And I say that because one in three of us, including myself, is a criminal and has been through the criminal justice system. Most of us because of drugs. And it shouldn't be that way. The criminal justice system was made for violent offenders who harm people, for people in society who just can't take part without threatening others. And I certainly don't feel like I fall into that category. And that's why I have become an advocate for broader criminal justice reform. But I'm also a medical marijuana patient. I have a genetic condition that I was born with. It's nothing I did. It's not my fault. But it affects every system in my body. I have a lot of chronic pain. I have a lot of nausea and I deal with vomiting. I lost actually 60 pounds from a lot of the stress that I've gone through in the last couple of years. And I couldn't stop losing weight. And cannabis helped me kind of keep it at bay a little bit. And so I certainly am a medical user, but I also am an advocate for recreational use. I worked in the state legislature on the legislative proposal that ended up becoming 502. And I had to make some really difficult decisions for me based on my own personal principles that were not easy. And even though I had worked pretty hard on that policy, I ended up choosing to oppose the initiative at the ballot because of some criminalization of users that were happening in that initiative. However, it has changed the paradigm. There are less arrests in Washington. People can drive around and not worry about being stopped in a traffic stop and being searched simply because of the smell of marijuana. Now, they do have to worry about, you know, being accused of driving impaired when they aren't impaired, but the actual use of marijuana and smelling it is no longer a cause to pull people over and search their vehicles. So that's a huge, huge paradigm shift, and we can't deny that just because it wasn't necessarily the popular choice for everybody. And certainly spiritual use, I've been enlightened in ways that I can't even begin to sum up in this movement, not only because of the cannabis use, but because of the people that I've met that use cannabis, and they've been enlightened by it. So I think the spiritual use is undeniable, and I do feel all three can coexist, and I feel that on all three levels, we have a lot more work to do. And so that means we need to figure out a way for us all to coexist and kind of, you know, work together some more, because we haven't won. It may be legal in Washington, but people are still going to prison. People are dying in prison in this state. And so that means we need to continue to figure out a way to move forward together, because we aren't going to win if we're fragmented into three separate categories, when we all know in our own lives we've used this in all three ways.
Thank you all. So 2 years ago, we had our debate here about I-502. Keith, Carrie were on opposite sides of that debate. The premise at the time was that I-502 would not affect the medical program that the voters of Washington initiated 15 years ago. Kari and others said it will, and in retrospect, it seems right. Right? From our perspective, medical use in Washington has been totally run over in the implementation of I-502. What's Normal going to do about that? What can we do about this?
Well, I think the first distinction has to be made, and I know it's easy, that a lot of people confuse this, but what happened is you lost control of your state legislature. In other words, when all of the people were voting, there was nothing in I-502 that limited medical use, as you know. But there is some pressure, and it's not just here. Colorado's dealing with it, and I think other states will be soon, too. A lot of experts who will say you can't maintain two separate markets. At some point, it may be one market where you simply don't have sales tax, for example, for patients, or you've got to recognize that they can't all afford to pay the same high price that consumers pay. But I don't think the drive to unify the markets is mistaken. I think that will happen over time, period. But we've got to be sensitive that we don't leave needy patients out. Now, I will have to say this. When I sometimes hear this argument made, it was we used to be able to have 28 plants or something, and now we can't have more than 8 plants.
Guys, and we can't get a recommendation for those 8 plants.
24 to how many? 6. I guess we're not quite sure what the minimum.
I believe that's what it is.
But I think it's 8, but I may be wrong. But what I'm saying is, before you start making the case that patients are dying in Washington because they can only grow 8 plants, I don't think that's happening, okay? I think we've got to be sensitive.
Well, we're being busted. We're going through the criminal justice system.
Not if you are following the terms of the law. It's just that the terms of the law have changed now, because of the legislature. But I'm saying I don't think you can fairly blame that on those who were wise enough to stop arresting smokers. What you can do is you can work to go back and improve it. And I'm all for that. I think, in fact, there are major efforts underway. You had personal cultivation in this latest amendment up until some jackass in your legislature took it out. So I mean, I think it's possible to correct the problems with I-502, but I don't think you should blame the voters that approved the end of arresting marijuana smokers for the fact that you've had problems in medical use.
Viv?
Yeah, I apologize. I'm going to have to leave pretty soon because I got to introduce some folks and I don't have anybody to cover for me. I voted against I-502 because of the DUI provision. However, I was glad it passed without my vote. I was glad it passed. In the long run, I think in the bigger picture nationally, it was more important. If Colorado would have passed and Washington had it, oh, it's an aberration, those crazy Oregonians, Coloradans, sorry. And I think it's been a tipping point, a critical mass to end this critical mess that we've had the four states pass. But I think even though the state legislature does look at, some of the state legislature looks at marijuana as OxyContin, cannabis, I think there's something deeply really wrong, and that was that we have all of these medical dispensaries in Washington State that had supply chains, they did huge investments of money, of capital to get established, they had supply chains, they had customer bases, they had point of sale systems, they knew the in and outs of the industry, they already were taking in money and selling cannabis, and instead of allowing them to transition into stores that could also serve the general public, we created an entirely new separate, let's create a new wheel. And we didn't even do it on a merit-based system. We did it on a lottery system. Whoever wins the lottery gets to open a recreational store. And I think that that was a huge mistake that hasn't been replicated in some of the other states. I think they did it a lot better than we did. I think that you could have 15 ounces and 24 plants, if I remember correctly. Am I right, Allison? Previously. And now you can have, I think, 3 ounces and 6 plants.
Four if you don't go on the registry.
Yeah, you can only have 6 if you put your name on a federal
registry.
Right,
4 plants if you don't go sign to a registry, which we all know that there's a huge data breach where millions of people's SSI numbers from the government were harvested, millions from China. So if you think that we can keep that registry out of the hands of the federal government, I think that's naive. So I think you have to be a master gardener to grow 4 plants and create a month's supply of cannabis. A master gardener. I think most patients are sick. They're broke. They don't know what they're doing. They can't produce for themselves. And I think that it's terrible what's going on in Washington State, but I think it's complicated stuff. You know, Reuben Carlyle, who was the sponsor of Senate Bill 2136, which just made it a Class C felony so that we couldn't have our adult use areas here at HempFest this year like we had last year that were sealed off in children, which I thought was a model for the future because there could be an adult use area in every event, every public event in Washington State, maybe all over the country eventually if we made those work, which is why we cooperated with the city in the course 15 days before HempFest. The city said, you know those use areas we made you do that you spent thousands of dollars on and you bought $8,000 worth of fire retardant shit that we made you put on them? Well, we can't do those this year. 15 days before the event, we had sponsors lined up. It was a nightmare. Anyway, Reuben Carlyle didn't want that in his bill. Senator Jinko Wales voted for it and didn't even know it was in there. Pete Holmes, our city attorney, is furious about that because he wants pot clubs. So it's a sausage factory in the legislature. It's very complicated stuff. And, you know, the guy that made that happen so that the bill could even pass at all is a right-wing Democrat who still looks at cannabis like it's OxyContin or worse. I think we went from the plutonium model to the OxyContin model, and even the alcohol model is not good enough for cannabis. We need the cannabis model, and it hasn't been done yet. That said, there's a lot of, there's division in our community like I've never seen in my life. There are people that despise me because I didn't vote for I-502 or didn't support it. Now there's people that despise me because people are saying that I was behind it. I've never seen the vitriol like this before. And unfortunately, it's a part of the process of democracy. There's a lot of uninformed people that want to make this about personalities rather than issues. They want to blame people, they want to point fingers, they want to create hate, they want villains. And I think that that's a massive mistake because this community was kumbaya for 35, 40 years, all totally in harmony. Not because we agreed on the implementation of the fine points of legalization, because it was so damn far down the road it seemed irrelevant. And now that we're doing it, We're being divided, and that's a mistake. We need to come back together and respect ourselves, respect the differences of an opinion, the differences in strategy, the differences in versions of implementation. And I'll wrap up. Because I think that we made a terrible mistake by allowing ourselves to be divided, because we can only go forth more united in unity, even though we may disagree. And as far as patients go, I think that the focus shouldn't be on who's a villain or who's behind I-52 or against it or anything like that. It needs to be, how are we going to mobilize our legislature to protect patients? Because I think what's happening is the state's looking for money. They're like, we need taxes. And like any large group that has armed people that can enforce things, takes over the black market, right? Even if it was the mob, they eliminate the competition. And I think that's what we're seeing in Washington State.
Thank you, Viv. Viv, if you have to go, let's give Vivian a round of applause.
Thank you so much. Let's give everybody on this panel a round of applause, including Donnie Wirtschafter. And I think the real applause goes to the incredible HempFest staff, which is still here after everything we put up with. I'm so sorry I got to leave, but I don't want to be there for a speaker who doesn't get introduced. Thank you. Carrie?
Vivian, really quick, was it $7 million economic impact HempFest brought in?
Absolutely. $7 million, which is equal to the 7 million people that can smoke can have cannabis in Washington State because of I-502. 7.1 million people can have an ounce of pot, and $7 million HempFest puts into the economy. Thank you.
So $7 million this event pumps into the local economy, and yet Representative Reuben Carlisle, who represents this district we're sitting in right now, still doesn't get it, that this is about more than just tax dollars. And that's one thing that's important. But also, you know, 3 years after the great I-502 debate, as it's been called, I still want to be proven wrong. And that's still possible. You know, we can fix this.
Well, may I ask, since marijuana arrests for minor offense, an ounce or less, have dropped from 7,000 to less than 150, now that's quite a drop. You think that's not justification enough for 502?
And how much have DUI arrests gone up? And how much have felony arrests gone up?
I don't think it's all 502 that did that, Keith.
It was illegal before 502, and it's now legal, and you don't have arrests, and you're saying they weren't connected?
No.
Well, no. Gloria's got a very good point.
What I want to say is it's not the passage of 502 that really screwed everything up. We put the Liquor Control Board in front of cannabis. We let the Liquor Control Board have our plant.
But the point is, you don't arrest smokers anymore.
And now in Seattle, they're no longer arresting people for possession of drugs, period. The law enforcement, the LEAD program, you're actually diverting people before their arrest. It's a pre-arrest thing. They're not busting people for small amounts because the system can't handle it. I mean, yes, it's true. There is a reduction of arrests, and yes, it's true, it's now legal, so how can you be arrested for something that's now legal? Duh. But it's not just because of 502. Gloria's right. I mean, at a certain level, the system can't handle it. They would probably have stopped arresting people for pot in this city anyway, although if you were an African American, you'd be more likely to be busted anyway, because the racial problems persist anyway, because legalization was this economic miracle, and that's why your legislature screwed it up. That's why Oregon's legislature has just finished screwing up Measure 91 and our adult use and the medical program that they swore they wouldn't.
And I agree with Doug, because his research has led me there, that the bigger problem can actually be cut off at a federal level by eliminating some of the prison profit. But the greater issue in Washington, the greater issue, and I think something that Carrie will agree with me on, is patients. There were people who for 20 years before the passage of 502 and the implementation by the legislature via the passage of House Bill 5052, or Senate Bill 5052 and House Bill 2136, an emergency, by the way, legislation that included in its introduction that they were taking away the rights of the small gardeners because it was a challenge to 502 profit. So my thing is this, it is one thing to implement people who have a whole bunch of money. That's great. Implement everybody. Let people sell recreational pot, goddammit. Let everybody get stoned for whatever reason you want to. But don't take away the right of People like my friends and my colleagues who for 20 years did nothing but grow 15, 30, 45 plants and give it away to people who needed it. No longer can we give it to you anymore. I watched friends die, and I'm going to say this for somebody who could not sit here and say it because they would cry. We have watched friends die because we can no longer produce the plant and make our own oil to give them. In Washington because of this legislation. And it wasn't 502's passage, it was the legislators. Keith is right down there in Olympia and we need to fire them. Sorry.
It wasn't 502's passage, but it was the divisiveness that has resulted, that has allowed this to happen. And it has caused deaths. Rick Smith, the person this tent is named after, died waiting for an organ transplant in this state where it's legal, and it still hasn't been fixed. So we got some work to do. We're renaming the Peter McWilliam stage, another man who died as a result of the federal prohibition, for Kevin Black, who is a wonderful HempFest volunteer. And now I'm going to get upset because my caregiver had to stop giving him RSO because she's now going to be a felon because of the result of this law, which means we still have more work to do. And Michael Safiati died in prison, serving time for misdemeanor marijuana possession in a state where it's legal, and he was 19 years old. And 502 didn't change it for him, which means we still have more work to do. And the biggest reason I opposed 502 is I was concerned about the divisiveness that we have witnessed today on this stage. And what I want to see from this panel is figuring out a way that we can move forward together, because people are dying. And there are competing markets. There's apples in this state. There's organic apples. I can have an apple tree in my yard and I can go buy chemical-filled apples if I want. We can work this out, and we have to, because people's lives are at stake.